Today is the 26th of January 2022. I am recording Kingsley Dixon on his recollections and research into Waimando Nursery. Thank you for doing this, Kingsley, for the Australian Garden History Society. And perhaps you can start with your introduction.
Yeah, so Kingsley Dixon, I'm a botanist and 68 years old, did my PhD at UWA and my undergraduate there, and spent my undergraduate, postgraduate life and my research career researching native plants. So my first contact with Waimando was in the summer holidays of 1965-1966. I was then a 12-year-old and didn't have anything to do in my summer holidays, so I would go with my father, who was the bulldozer driver for the West Midland rubbish dump. On the way between our house in Bayswater and the West Midland rubbish dump, we went past Guildford Grammar, and out the front there was this sign to a nursery, Waimando Native Plant Nursery. And I saw this day after day, and then finally built the courage up to ask my father, could I possibly stop there? And so he said, I'll drop you there in the morning and then I'll pick you up at the end of the day, which was rather epic. But I was fine, I had my lunch, and if necessary, I'd just sit somewhere anyway. So in I walked, cold turkey, unannounced, and knocked on the back door, which was the entry to the main house. I remember Nan Harper came out. She was always the one that, as a young child, I found her a little stern, but it was just her wonderfully proper style. And all I remember was she had her reading glasses on, she looked over her glasses and she just said, yes, looking down at this boy. And I just said, hi, I was hoping, well, hello then. I was hoping there might be something I could do around the nursery, because I didn't know what else to say. So it must have been very confronting to see this little person standing there wanting to work in the nursery. I didn't want to be paid for it. We sort of hit it off, and then Sue came to the door to see what was happening. I spent the day helping them with potting mixes and all sorts of other things, and I just kept seeing all these wonderful native plants everywhere, things that I'd only known from the bush, which you never saw in local nurseries. And I wasn't a precocious child, I was very shy, but when it came to plants, all bets were off, because I just loved plants, and clearly they loved native plants, so we just bonded immediately, and they stayed lifelong friends till they both died.
Where was it?
So it was between the preparatory school of Guildford Grammar and the main school. So sitting along Great Eastern Highway between the two schools.
So you could see it from Great Eastern Highway?
Oh, yes. Yeah. It was a big property. So they were the granddaughters of Charles Harper, who, of course, set up WA newspapers, set up Guildford Grammar, was a parliamentarian. And they would have originally been in Woodbridge, but probably moved as very small children into the main house that was in Guildford. So Woodbridge was exited a long time before that, being a grand old Victorian house and difficult to upkeep, I guess. So they were in a single-storey but very expansive, fabulous sort of early Federation house.
Do you know where that was?
Yeah, on Great Eastern Highway, and the Federation house was, which is now, all the gardens are gone, most of the very significant trees for that fabulous garden have gone, and it's now part of the Guildford Grammar estate.
I'm sorry, you're right.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, so yep. It's just incorporated in that at this stage. Mm.
Sorry, carry on.
So those early days were extremely formative for me, because I then started to learn propagation, soil mixes, native plant diversity, and could talk to people about native plants, and I started getting exposed to Latin names, which I found totally overwhelming, mystifying, and frightened me. And I somehow thought, this is a secret language that I will never understand, because my grandparents and my parents loved the bush. We were always in the bush, always doing picnics, and we always used common names. Oh, that'll be the she-oaks, kangaroo paws, blue bonnets. It was always common names, never ever a Latin name. Suddenly, not only were they talking in Latin names, but there were plant labels with Latin names on them. And gradually, when somebody's talking these names a lot, you begin to try to practice. That was really the toughest part of the rest of it, of the propagation and helping them out and the prunings. It was hard and it was heavy work sometimes, in particular because I used to get into the garden and we'd prune trees and all the rest of it during that summer holidays. And then I kept turning up regularly, and they never really got to know my parents. They were always just Auntie Nan and Auntie Sue, these two amazing women.
Auntie Nan.
Auntie Nan and Auntie Sue as well.
Was that Nancy or was
Nancy
it?
Nancy, okay. and Susan.
Yeah.
I then discovered lots of things about them and their passion for native plants. I saw their catalogues, which were fabulous. I've managed to see some of those catalogues to remind myself that this was right at the desmalation, when we went desmal, and there were plants for 8 shillings and 6 shillings and so on, and quite expensive plants, but that was some of the bigger container stock that they had. They had an extraordinary diversity of things, both western and some eastern state species, and in the main garden around the house, I remember some of the impressive specimens that I had. That they had Brachychiton acerifolium, probably the biggest I've ever seen, growing in the back garden. Gigantic plant. But the plant that I fell in love with was Alocasiorina torulosa, the beautiful weeping eastern she-oak, which used to go the most hauntingly magenta colours. Plus they had extraordinary rose gardens and a big collection of exotic trees, with the biggest ginkgo, I think, in Perth at that stage. I'm not certain whether that's still
a biggest
there.
What?
Ginkgo.
Oh, ginkgo.
A maidenhair tree. And and then they told me, and this is the tree with knees, which was taxodium, which is the wonderful autumn foliage thing from the Mississippi Delta. And these things were all part of this opening of my botanical knowledge, because up until that stage, I only had grandparents and parents who had great veggie gardens, grew lots of fruit trees, and had the small shade house. But the first impressions that I had when I was walking through the front gate, I remember turning to the left, and there was a vast fern house. It was a lath house, classic lath house of the period, enormous. Now, we had a little shade house, which was made with macrosamia fronds on the top and vertical laths on the side, but it was tiny, and this was big. It was full of all these fabulous ferns, and it was all very cool. And I remember walking past that going, oh gosh, this feels like a really nice place. And gradually over time, I got to do more and more work in the fern house, mostly exotic species, but it was still really interesting. And in amongst there were two plants that I fell in love with. One was, they had an orange crucifix orchid, because I didn't realise that I had orchid genes in my blood, but this was the awakening of those genes. And they had Phaeus tankerviliae, which is the nun orchid from Eastern Australia. And that became a very significant plant, because that undoubtedly was brought over from the East as a plant by probably their great-grandfather, because they used to be widely collected around Sydney, and now it's a listed threatened species because it's been over collected. And that original plant, I remember I was in charge of dividing it, and I did get a piece of that. And today there are many dozens and dozens of pieces, both in Kings Park and all around the place, from that original Y Mandu stock. But they were the sort of plants that started to influence me. But it was the propagation and the general work around the nursery and that extraordinary diversity that I kept seeing that just impressed me so much that I wanted to go and find some of the magical places. They would talk about these places like Lake Grace. And I'd never been there. We'd been out in the wheat belt a lot because my father was a professional poultry shower. So he used to do all the nearby wheat belt shows, Beverly, York, Brookton shows, Armidale shows, showing the chooks. But of course, we were always going to the showgrounds and never to the bush. And so where there was a little bit of bush, I'd be off having a quick look there. But I didn't know what I was looking at because as a young kid, being that interested in native plants,
yep.
particularly because we're still clearing 1 million acres a year at that point, having an interest in bushland plants was a little bit odd. But of course, in springtime, my parents would always go out and we'd go orchid hunting. We'd do the wheat belt, and then we'd do the northern banks of woodlands for the she oaks and go for the white spider orchids and donkey orchids and all of those things. And I always wondered why they never had bush orchids growing in their nursery, because of course I didn't understand at that stage they're very complicated. At that stage, we now know it's all about mycorrhizae and a whole lot of stuff. And propagating from seed is really complicated, and that's something that I've done in my career. But overall, the nursery diversity, I just thought was astonishing and bewildering. And so bits and pieces from the nursery started to appear in our garden in Bayswater. And the very first plant we put in was a plant that I thought was the most bizarre gum tree I'd ever seen, which is the Weeping Princess or Silver Princess, Eucalyptus caesia. And we put that in and this thing launched up like crazy. And it's still there today. So I think I got that plant probably in about 1968, 1969. Still there today, still growing, still flowering, a gigantic individual. And they, of course, would have got that from Voyage and Rock, the original seed, saw the value of it, and grew that particular cultivar, because Eucalyptus caesia has a number of subspecies, depending on which taxonomy you go by. But the Silver Princess is the dramatic architectural leaping eucalypt, which flowers almost the whole year.
Now, what address is the Bayswater House?
Well, that's in 2 Lovell Way, Bayswater. So it's still got that original tree growing on the northeastern side.
That's
of the
worth
house.
Going and driving by and
yeah,
having a look
at. Yeah, just to see one
it.
Of those
yeah.
from the original Wyomindo nursery.
Yeah.
But over the years, they followed my career. They were really supportive. We used to go to Wildflower Society meetings from time to time together, and gradually I went on and did botany at UWA, did a PhD, stayed in touch with them, and then joined Kings Park. And at that stage, Wyomindo clearly was struggling financially. It was a difficult gig. 2 women setting out to set up a major native plant business. They weren't the first, but they were one of the earliest. We're still very early in the piece. And remember, there weren't great demands for native plant treescapes in civic plantings. There weren't the huge demands there are today for restoration. In fact, we were knocking bush over because it was inexhaustible. So I think it was always a financial struggle. I never understood that. But they still had a very loyal following, and I think they clearly influenced the thinking of many people. But simultaneously, the Lolfordses had arrived and started working at King's Park in about 1965, and there was this almost underground movement of people who were passionate native plant growers and propagators, and they found a venue and an outlet through the Wildflower Society, and Nan and Sue were not only in the Parent Society but also the Darlington branch, and they were always regular people turned up there.
Can I ask you when they started the nursery? Do you know?
So I thought it was somewhere in about 1960, 1961.
Oh, that late.
Yeah, yeah. Late 50s, early 60s,
okay.
Yeah. There were the 3 sisters, Nan, Sue and Cecily. never tracked down. Cicely wasn't that involved with the nursery, but Nan and Sue certainly was. It was their life. And
so did they have an interest in the Wildflower Society before the nursery started?
Don't know. We didn't talk a lot about that, because there were other things we were talking about as well. They had this very keen interest being both trained nurses and seeing the disadvantagement of Indigenous children. They started to develop new outlets in addition to their native plant interest in Aboriginal child health. And so I started listening to them, because for me, as a young kid, didn't know anything about Aboriginal people, didn't know an Aboriginal word, didn't know the extraordinary health issues, particularly with young children and babies. They did, they saw it. And so Sue went back and got further training and was working in the Midland area trying to help Noongar children with all sorts of terrible, terrible complaints. And so I actually became involved in that, and I became, I think, the youngest card-holding member of what was called the New Era Aboriginal Fellowship, NEAF, which they set up, and they ran from their house and had a whole group of people. And I remember helping them with the printing machine to print off little
Ronio's
things. And but I couldn't talk about it at home, because no one was really that interested. It certainly wasn't something you spoke about at school. So this was just something that they influenced my life, and that's stayed with me ever since. So, you know, extraordinarily impressive women. And when you remember, they both lost their fiancés in World War II, never married. People often say, did they ever speak much about the old days? I think the old days for people like that were things you didn't want to remember. You know, they'd lost brothers and fiancés in two world wars. They just weren't... History wasn't a pleasant place to be.
They would have been born in the 1920s.
Yeah, very early. So,
No, that's right.
Now, they always stayed very connected to the bush, and when they sold up Waimando, or sold back to Guildford Grammar, they then moved to Darlington, set up a big native plant garden. And my time at Kings Park, we were working on a whole range of things like native rushes and sedges. These are Cyperaceae and Restinaceae. We cracked the difficult propagation. And so I was always dropping by with material, and they started having lots of these things in their garden, which was really great. We had lots of surplus research material. So suddenly I was giving back to them a little of what they gave to me. I'm not certain that the property was long since sold, what's happened to that garden, but it really was a miniature botanical garden.
I'm going to ask, have you got an address for that?
I don't have the number, but it was in Allpike Street in Darlington. It was on the upside of the hill, and it would be fairly obvious you'd see some remnant native plants. But I remember visiting them and greatly concerned when they said, have a look what we've got. We've got a camper van. And I knew Sue, who did all the driving, had a lead foot. They used to have this little Subaru, they used to roar around Perth. I remember once they roared past us along Riverside Drive, and I'm going, that's Nan and Sue. It looked like Sue was just consigning her life to holding on, and Sue was driving like mad. So they got the camper van, and then they went off exploring the countryside and looking at native plants. And so we used to share great stories of their travels. And that was towards the end of their time in being mobile, but what a great way to finish what I think was an extraordinary contribution to Western Australian life, to Western Australian nurseries, to our native plants, to conservation, and to Indigenous communities. Mm. They're both buried in Guildford Nursery and Guildford Cemetery, I went to both of those funerals. And very sad time for me, because it was really the passing of an extraordinary time. And I was just so thrilled that they were able to influence my life in such a positive and supportive way, that had I not walked through that front gate in 1966, maybe I would have got to the same spot. I think I got there a lot faster with greater and more compelling tutors.
That sounds absolutely fabulous, because at the time when you've mentioned that there was no real interest in Western Australian native plants.
That's right.
There they were, yeah. And they probably went, oh my goodness, he's interested, yes, come on board.
Yeah, because there's nothing taught in your schools. So, you wouldn't know anything.
No.
So it was all very invisible. And, you know, I still reflect on all the sort of plants that... I remember they had Marsilia drummondii. This is an aquatic fern, grows in rock pools. And all I remember was looking at this thing growing, thinking, oh my gosh, it's a four-leaf clover. And I'd heard about four-leaf clovers, but of course it's not a clover, it's a fern. And there were plants like that, and they stayed with me my whole life, and I still grow it today. Different species to the one that they had, but that was the sort of collecting. And of course that was an important indigenous food plant in the arid zone. It's what John Eyre ate, but it's not a very nutritious food. But it was just those fabulous collections of different species.
I'm interested in the bush tucker concept that we just use as a sideline. In Waimando, did they actually have section?
No, not at all. These were all ornamentals. So there's nothing for conservation. Bird-friendly gardens hadn't really been invented at that stage. It was just fabulous diversity. So, for example, I remember one of my first tasks was being in charge of planting the macrosamia seeds, which are gigantic big seeds, and they showed me how to place them halfway, bury them on their long axis, flat, and only half the way up, and then I watched as the little radical came out, went into soil, and up came these little things. Little did I know that if those were still alive today, they would still only be quite small plants,
because
they're very slow growing. But they just collected these things, even though they were just plants of the local bushland. So they were really good at getting out and about and growing stuff that we took for granted, and I think that was part of the problem. People going, well, why would I bother with a plant that grows in the bush at the end of the street? But of course now we do, because all the bush at the end of the street is gone.
Were they fated by people like the Wildflower Society? Were they asked to talk about their...
I don't think they were people... they were very modest and very withdrawn. So they were never people prominent when we went along to wildflower meetings.
Not like the Naturalist Club or...
No. And they did put on displays in early Kings Park wildflower festivals, it used to be called the Wildflower Display, when it used to be on Fraser Avenue in a big Hessian rectangular tent thing with lots of wild picked flowers, because that's what happened in those days. And they, I think, only had a couple of years where they exhibited, and I managed to discover at Kings Park, in the skip bin, the Waimandu nursery sign that they would have used that forgot to pick up. And so I've still got that. So that's an important relic of Waimandu nursery. In fact, I think it's the only, other than the catalogues, is the only material item remaining from that nursery period.
Would you mind if I use that photograph, which I think was taken at the talk that you gave?
Yeah.
I do have a copy.
Yeah,
it's
fabulous.
Put that in the talk.
Yeah,
oh, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. At the time, I took it home. What do you want that for? I said, well, because the nursery that I went to.
So you knew.
I knew. Yeah, and it's a marvellous Banksia menziesii. I just painted with, I guess, Dulux paint. There's no, but brilliantly done back then. So they had wonderful sign writers.
So you mentioned the particular trees that were at the nursery. Did anything remain after Guildford Grammar took over?
I guess I was a little shocked at the the way the whole garden was demolished. The rose garden's gone, the fern house is gone, the brachychaeton is still there because I've seen that behind the house. But I just think I would be fairly crestfallen to see that Greta, which that really fabulous garden, which we used to sit in and have cordial in, looking at all the plants and them talking about some of the exotic stuff, which I didn't understand terribly much. That was mostly all gone, and certainly there's no remnants, from what I understand, people going out of the old nursery structures.
It's a shame. That fernery sounded fantastic. Was it large?
Yeah, so it was the size of a suburban house. It's a big rectangular thing, walked in one end and had a pathway that meandered, and there were big blechnums and creeping ferns and maidenhairs all over the place.
Mm.
Mountains of water being sprayed everywhere, of course, because back then there was abundant water coming from Mundaring Weir.
Yeah. And they were relatively close to the Swan River.
They were set up high.
Yeah, so...
So they're on heavy clays, which were always difficult to go on.
No, I've lived in Guildford.
Yeah, they complained about that. Of course, the really good stuff is down on the floodplain, which was right at the foot. That's where you grow the most extraordinary gardens, but you had to be prepared for the regular inundation. So gardening up there was difficult. I was always raised on sand, so I found this clay stuff completely amusing as a kid. I thought it was rather fun.
So you're age 12, and did you continue there through your high school years?
So I stayed in touch with them. I kept getting dropped off there, not that frequently. It was just difficult, particularly when Dad moved jobs. And from time to time, I caught the train to Guildford and then walked up there. And I must say, it was a pretty long trip, which was getting to the station in Bayswater or Bassendean, a train, and then walking all the way. But I do remember some of the walking was because it was
hard
in summer holidays.
In summer,
yeah. But it was always the reward of the seeing at the end.
I'm grateful for you to...
Oh, thank you.
Talk about it. Have you got anything that...
I think it's important to reflect that they were, I think, important in some of the amazing plants we still have today. And the one that really comes to mind was they mentioned to me, because they had a place called Nardu, which was the Busselton Beach House on Geograph Bay. So that was the Harper Summer Holiday House. Spectacular north-facing. I never went there, but north-facing on the bay. And that's where a local farmer took them to his cow paddock, where there was the famous pink Anaxanthus flavus, the green kangaroo paw, but a bright lollipop pink one. And that, of course, has given us a whole lot of amazing hybrids from that pink one. And I grow some of those pink hybrid ones today. They're really quite astonishing. So I think they were really important for that. They were important for bringing in lots of the eastern states couriers, the little bells. They really liked them. And I can now look back and go, yeah, that's because they were sort of green, soft-leaved and pretty flowered. I also remember... and counted up in one of their catalogues 21 species of eucalypts. So sure, we've got 600 species here, but it's a pretty good effort by any stretch of the imagination. And the plant that I thought was fabulous and was thrilled to see it growing in the wild on one of our summer holidays, rare summer holidays to Augusta, was the grey Melaleuca, Melaleuca incarna. And they were growing this as a lovely tallish shrub with big weeping grey foliage and little terminal creamy white flowers. And that was one of their premier plants that everybody wanted. It grows in the Busselton area, so that's where they would have got their seed.
Does it grow here?
It grows all around Augusta. in the wetter areas. It's a lovely sort of thing, and now there's a little dwarf one that's grown as a cushion plant. They didn't find that one. That's, I think, George Lulford's selection. So, extraordinary diversity, Australian plants, but mostly Western Australian. Great propagators. I never got the chance to share with them the discovery of smoke for germination, because that was to come in 1995, by which stage they'd long since exited the nursery business. But they followed the smoke discovery and were so thrilled that that meant so many plants they could never germinate, but had to grow from cuttings, could never be grown. So we continued talking and sharing botanical knowledge all the way to when they were in aged care.
Well, I hope that they are acknowledged for their contribution, because the more we become more aware and value the native plants.
Yeah.
But this whole thing about importing and bringing nurserymen that have been part of our European history is quite amazing.
Mm.
They
came from, of course, the landed gentry, the very wealthy end of town. But it's fascinating that they had such a connection to the bush and to the indigenous communities in a most astonishing way. Yeah. And so they invested much of the family fortune in setting up the Miralinga Trust, were great supporters of then a very young a PhD student called Fiona Stanley.
Mm-hmm.
And so they invested in the Miralinga Foundation, which was part of what that was about, was rediscovering language as a way of rebuilding their fractured and broken societies, which of course is fundamental. If you don't have a language base and you're using someone's borrowed language, you're really denying your heritage. And so they were well ahead of the curve in realising language was a fundamental part of rebuilding stronger indigenous communities.
Can I ask you to spell Miralinga?
Miralinga. Miralinga.
Yeah.
Miralinga Foundation. That's still going today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
But they blew most of the cash on that. Good on them.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much. I do appreciate that.
It's fantastic to do it.
It's been great.
It's nice that it's... I'm just a little bit astonished that out of all the extended family, this whole part of life just wasn't important. I guess it's up to a little kid from Bayswater.